structure, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. Before we get started, I just wanted to quickly take this moment to share this disclaimer with you all to provide more clarity that myself or any of my guests on Fed Up do not speak for or speak or act on behalf of any federal agency or union, specifically the ones we are talking about within this episode of Fed Up, and all opinions or views expressed and or experiences shared on this podcast are those of the individual speaking and do not represent the opinions or views of the federal agency or union that are discussed in this episode, nor does anyone on this podcast, officially or unofficially, represent the federal agency or union being discussed within this episode of Fed Up. Any guest speaking on this podcast are doing so off the clock, off duty, and out of uniform on their own personal time. And again, do not represent the federal agency or union discussed on this episode of Fed Up. Having said that, today there will be no guest on the show. It'll be just me, as I want to talk about a resource here that is very, very useful and at our disposal should we need to use it. A resource that will include a lot of information. And listen, guys, I'm going to be upfront with you. This episode may not be as entertaining as it is informational, but I ask that you please listen to this episode in its entirety, as it includes a resource that is overlooked and ignored too many times because people just simply don't know about it or don't know how to go about using it. And it's something that all of us federal workers should learn and educate ourselves on, especially when we have nowhere to turn to for help, which is the majority of us out there right now, when mistreatment, retaliation, or unjust termination befalls onto us from management, stemming from an on-the-job work injury or a safety hazard or issue being reported. It's a resource that can help give discipline and accountability to management and the agency itself for their willful misconduct, and is a resource, when used properly, may be used to protect our rights, and in its own right is a way to fight back against management and, again, to get that accountability and discipline for their wrongful actions, regardless if your union representation is there for you or not. Only difference is you'll be doing so in a lawful and just way as opposed to how management acts and treats us, which is often with willful misconduct and oftentimes with total disregard for the law or contract as well. So if you have suffered or are currently suffering from an on-the-job work injury or constantly being forced to work in an unsafe manner and have been retaliated against from management because of you reporting your work injury or for reporting that safety or hazard issue, or worse, fired for reporting it to begin with, then I suggest you get a pen and a pad, because what I'm going to share here is going to be very informational and useful for us all, and is something we all can learn about and do with or without our union representative. Matter of fact, I urge all union representatives to learn and educate themselves on this just as much as I want each and every one of you out there to do as well, as not only will it help make us more knowledgeable as a union to fight back against management, but it will also help all of you on an individual level as well to fight back and advocate for yourself without having or needing any representation at all. As it's just as I say all the time here, knowledge is power. And when we flex that knowledge together, not just as a union organization, but on an individual level as well across this country, believe me, you will start to see a slight change in the attitude of management and the agency and how they approach us with regards to safety and on-the-job work injuries. And if they don't, well, then we keep doing what we do until they do. You understand? But again, remember, united we stand, but divided we fall. So it's got to be a collective action that needs to take place if you want to see any real change happen across the board here. So let's get right into it here, shall we? The resource I want to talk about here is none other than OSHA. And I want to talk about what they can do for us, how they can help us, including going over the OSHA 300 log and the OSHA 11C fact sheet as well with you all, and even talk about some stories from others that I talked with and how they utilized OSHA to help fight back against management's willful misconduct and sometimes illegal actions they take on us, the federal employees. And I may even throw in some other things in there as well for us postal employees that we can use. Now, I want to be clear here. There are many federal agencies out there that OSHA covers, and nearly every federal employee in the nation comes under OSHA's jurisdiction with some exceptions, such as minors, some transportation workers, many public employees and the self-employed, and pretty much those employees whose workplace hazards are regulated by another federal agency. Also, most private sector employees and their workers in all 50 states, including the District of Columbia and other U.S. jurisdictions, are either directly covered through federal OSHA or through an OSHA-approved state program. Regardless, though, employers subject to the OSHA Act of 1970 have a general duty to provide work in a workplace free from recognized serious hazards. Having said that, for the sole purpose of this episode, I want to talk about OSHA and how it refers to United States Postal Service employees, as it seems to be most of you who are having the most issues with your agency here regarding your safety issues or retaliation or termination from reporting your work injuries or said safety or hazard issues. And are right now the majority of federal employees coming forward here on Fed Up or anywhere else for that matter to voice your concerns and these wrongdoings. So again, if you are not an employee within the United States Postal Service, that doesn't mean that what I'm saying doesn't apply to you. I'm just saying make sure it does, as it may be included as one of the exceptions I just mentioned earlier. And if you are a federal employee working in a different federal agency outside the Postal Service, then certain things may not apply to you here as well that I'm going to be getting into, like the ELM, for example. So check with your own contract if you are part of a federal union outside of the Postal Service here, and check with your own agency's policies and procedures and see how they both can go hand in hand with OSHA law and regulations if you fall under OSHA and are a covered employee, that is, right? But please, just keep that in mind. So let's start with what OSHA is and give you a little background on this agency before we really get into it. OSHA, which stands for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, is a regulatory agency of the United States Department of Labor that originally had federal visitorial powers to inspect and examine workplaces, right? Now, prior to OSHA, workplace safety training was largely unregulated and workplace hazards had a high potential to be serious or fatal. It wasn't until 1970 when then-President Richard Nixon signed into law the Occupational Safety and Health Act on December 29th, 1970, which was enacted on April 28th, 1971. Now, with the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970, Congress then created the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is OSHA as we know it today, right? Which gave the federal government the authority to set and enforce safety and health conditions and standards for most of the country's workers by setting and enforcing these standards and by providing training, outreach, education, and even assistance. Today, the head of OSHA is none other than Doug Parker, who was sworn in on November 3rd, 2021, and whose official title is Assistant Secretary of Labor. And here's a little fun fact for y'all out there. And listen, I know that I may talk a lot of shit on unions and union misrepresentation or lack thereof in a lot of cases, right? But don't get it twisted. I think unions are great when they do what they were supposed to do. I think I made that loud and clear on numerous occasions here. It's merely the select few. Well, more than a select few now, I feel, but it's those union leaders who are complacent and who don't give a shit about their members and don't give them the proper representation that they both deserve and are entitled to as union dues paying members. That's who I talk shit about. That's whose card I'm pulling, right? And rightfully so. I mean, collusion, corruption, unethical acts, whatever it is that these select union leaders are involved in that's given the union as a whole a bad rap, a bad name, if you will, right? That's who I talk shit about. That's who I want to call out. They got to go. So if any union leadership out there are feeling some type of way, if I or others have called you out, it's for good reason. Like we said, y'all need to go. But again, unions are great when they do what they were formed to do. Now, in saying that, back to that fun fact here. In the 1960s, it was actually unions that helped mobilize hundreds of thousands of workers and their unions to push for federal legislation that ultimately resulted in the passage of the Mine Safety and Health Act of 1969 and then the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. This is one of the big examples of why you always hear me say that together we stand, but divided we fall. And this example right here proves why that is true. So I applaud those union members and organizations that push for this. I salute you all. My hat's off to you. Way to stand together and create change for all of us, which is exactly what I and others like the Corey Waltons out there are trying to do for us today. This is why I created Fed Up, right? Not only to bring us together and educate or inform us on certain things, but to also share our stories and frustrations from the mistreatment from management or the misrepresentation from our unions or lack thereof, as I mentioned earlier, and the issues within the Department of Labor and OWCP that we all experience as well, in hopes that we can gain the attention from those that can help us create change within their respective positions within society. The totality of the unjust and brokenness, collusion, corruption, and unethical acts within these agencies and our union organizations have been hurting us all, and it's only getting worse. The only way we're going to change anything is, again, if we all unite as one and take a stand and demand change, just like those did before us, right? From those involved that pushed for the Mine Safety and Health Act in 1969 to Vince Sombrato, the godfather of collective bargaining, who ironically in the same year that the Occupational Safety and Health Act was signed into law by President Nixon, paved the way for the NALC today by playing a huge part in the U.S. postal strike of 1970, as Sombrato helped to expand the union into more than 100 cities and involved more than 200,000 new members. And as some of you know, went on to become not only the president of the NALC, but is now looked at as one of the greatest leaders the NALC, or any other union for that matter, has ever had. Now listen, I could go on and on with my little history lesson here, as I love history and learning as much as I love helping you all across this country, but I just wanted to give you a brief rundown on the background of OSHA before we really get into it here. And hopefully I did just that. If you want to know more about, regarding the background and history of OSHA or, Vince Sombrato or anything else I just mentioned here earlier, please, by all means, when you have an off day, feel free to research OSHA and look any of those things up. Because again, knowledge is power, right? But for now, we're going to keep it moving and talk about what OSHA can do for us and how they can help us. So what does OSHA do for us federal employees and how can they help us? Well, as I mentioned earlier, OSHA gives the federal government the authority to set and enforce safety and health conditions and standards for most of the country's workers by setting and enforcing these standards and by providing training, outreach, education, and the assistance, right, when needed. This means that OSHA law makes it clear that the right to a safe workplace is not only a basic human right, but it is also the employer's responsibility to create and maintain a safe working environment in order to minimize the chance for any work-related injuries, illnesses, or fatalities. In fact, it's OSHA's mission to do just this, and they are dedicated to the basic proposition that no worker should have to choose between their life and their job. Yet, here we are, and a majority of us federal employees, especially postal employees, come face to face with this decision every single year. And let me just add, this is not the fault of OSHA, but it is the fault of poor management and our respected agencies really not giving a damn or caring for their employees and not giving the proper training to management. And if they do, again, Management just does what they want to do with no repercussions. It's time we start holding our agencies responsible and management responsible for their willful misconduct and neglect towards safety. Not just safety within the workplace, but our safety as well. The overall picture of safety, if you will, right? This is why you always hear me say that safety is your call, not management's, not your coworkers. Your safety is your call. You can refuse or question a direct order if safety is in question or poses a significant risk to injury. Now, I'm not saying refuse direct orders all the time here and abuse it, right? But you got to have an honest conversation with yourself regarding if a direct order is given to you from management that is perhaps unsafe. That's all I'm saying. I know unions out here say you can't refuse a direct order and that you got to do whatever they're asking you to do and then grieve it later. And listen, you do what you want to do. But for me, if it has a potentially high risk of causing a traumatic injury or possess a huge safety hazard, I'm going to question that direct order and possibly even refuse it. After all, it's just as I say all the time here, your main goal at the end of each tour is to make it home safe and sound to your loved ones, period. That's it. And this attaches to another thing that I say all the time, which is knowledge is power, right? As the more we learn and educate ourselves, especially on OSHA law regarding workplace hazards and safety and workplace injuries, the better prepared we are to refuse such direct orders because we can tell management not only why we are refusing that direct order, but also potentially cite OSHA law or regulations to support why we are refusing a direct order. But getting back on track here, I want to share some things here that come straight from OSHA's website, which is www.osha, that's OSHA.gov. And when I'm done with this, man, I guarantee you can pick out a few things that your employer or management is not following or doing. But here's what it says. And listen, if you are management listening to this, I want you to listen, as this is for you just as much as it is for your employees. But it says it's the responsibilities under OSHA law that states that employers have the responsibility to provide a safe workplace. Employers must provide their workers with a workplace that does not have serious hazards and must follow all OSHA safety and health standards. Employers must find and correct safety and health problems. OSHA further requires that employers must first try to eliminate or reduce hazards by making feasible changes in working conditions rather than relying on personal protective equipment, PPE, right? Such as masks, gloves, or earplugs, whatever the case is. Switching to safer chemicals and closing processes to trap harmful fumes or using ventilation systems to clean the air are all examples of effective ways to eliminate or reduce risks. Now, I'm going to read some stuff here. It's kind of a little bit of a list, like 10 things, give or take. But pay attention to what I'm going to say, because I guarantee you can pick a few of these out that is not being followed. But it states, employers must also prominently display the official job safety and health, it's the law poster that describes rights and responsibilities under the OSHA Act. Now, this poster is free and can be downloaded from www.osha.gov. Guys, have you seen this poster entitled It's the Law at your office or installation where you work at? Posted anywhere. Hopefully it is. But if not, let OSHA know. Moving on here, the second thing here, it says employers must inform workers about chemical hazards through training, labels, alarms, color-coded systems, chemical information sheets, and other methods. Number three, provide safety and training to workers in a language and vocabulary they can understand. Guys, are you getting the proper training and safety? And if so, do you understand it? I ask this because of the alleged falsifying of staff training records was brought to light after our brother Eugene Gates died of a heat-related illness, which two members from Congress in Texas want to push for a public hearing with the Postal Service to address employee heat-related illnesses and deaths. Make sure you are getting proper training, guys, and are signing off on said training. Also, read what you sign before you sign it. Take a picture if you want, or request a copy and keep for your records. After all, anything you sign and that has your signature, you are entitled to get a copy of. Now, the next thing here on this list, it states that employers must keep accurate records of work-related injuries and illnesses, which falls in line with the OSHA 300 log, which I'll talk more about later here. It also says employers must perform tests in workplace such as air sampling required by some OSHA standards. The next one is provide required personal protective equipment, again, PPE, at no cost to workers. Listen, guys, how many of you had to buy your own mask or gloves or sanitizer during COVID because management didn't give it to you? Well, that's a safety issue, and that should have been addressed from your agency and your management. The next one here, it says employers must provide hearing exams or other medical tests required by OSHA standards. And then it says employers must post OSHA citations and injury and illness data where workers can see them. Which again, guys, we'll talk more about this one a bit later on here, but this is a big one for us as well. The next one in line here says employers must notify OSHA within 8 hours of a workplace fatality or within 24 hours of any work-related inpatient hospitalization, amputation, or loss of an eye. There's even a number here to call, so there's no excuses. They give you that number. And I'll even say that number here. That number is 1-800-321-OSHA. Easy for us to remember, right? Now, here's the next one, guys. This is, I'm just going to read this off first. But it says employers must not retaliate against workers for using their rights under the law, including their right to report a work-related injury or illness. Guys, this is a big one here and is the very reason why I wanted to do this episode. This happens way too often than it should. Now, the next one here then says employers must pay for the types of required personal protective equipment, which I think I've addressed already. But under OSHA law, workers are entitled to working conditions that do not pose a risk of serious harm. Again, this goes with providing PPE at no cost to employees, as I mentioned earlier. Now, in having said all that, look how much we can see how management isn't following what OSHA regulates them to follow. As I know, a lot of us can pick apart what I just read through right there and find two or more things that are not being followed or done from management, with the main focus on where it states that employers should not retaliate against workers for using their rights under the law, including their right to report a work-related injury or illness. Again, these are OSHA laws and regulations. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't those management regimes or agencies that do follow these rules and regulations, because there is, and even CFRs, right? They do, but the majority are not. And that is where we need the accountability here, right? Well, the first thing we got to understand is that the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970 provides for citations, penalties, and criminal referrals for those employers who fail to comply to the regulations and laws set forth from OSHA. If they are not following OSHA laws and regulations, report it. Report it now. Report it right away. This is huge for us. I can't not emphasize this enough, as this includes the United States Postal Service, as the Postal Service is subject to Public Law Number 91-596, the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970, pursuant to the Postal Employees Safety Enhancement Act, also known as PESEA, right, of 1998. And listen up, postal employees. Check out the ELM, that's the Employee and Labor Relations Manual, in Section 8, which is entitled Safety, Health, and Environment. And ironically, it starts with Section 810, entitled Occupational Safety and Health Program. I urge you all to read through this section, as it states what management's responsibilities are and a whole host of other important relevant information that you can pick apart and use against management and the agency, especially when we file grievances, as we all know that management never follows any rules or even regulations or laws for that matter, right? They just make up their own shit as they go. And the funny thing is they'll switch it up again and again and again with no repercussions to their blatant disregard for the contract laws or their own policies and procedures. That's just crazy, man. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. You already know what it is. That's just crazy. But we all see this every single day happening in our workplaces. So please go to Section 8 of the ELM, starting with Section 810, and just start reading. Now, I will also post a PDF of this section to my Fed Up Facebook page as well for you to download to your devices should you need it on the fly. But again, the more you read, the more I guarantee that you will see things that management isn't doing that they are supposed to do. And you can even line certain things up within that with what I just shared there from OSHA's website in regards to what employers should and should not do. And also with what I want to talk about here next, which is the OSHA 300 log. By now, y'all have heard me talk about the OSHA 300 log in some of my episodes here briefly and how we can use that to fight back against management regarding safety and our health, especially when we get injured on the job and they retaliate against us or terminate us for reporting our injury or even reporting a safety violation. So in this episode, I really want to get into this resource that we can use to our advantage, starting with the OSHA 300 log. Again, this is a log of work-related injuries and illnesses that is used to classify work-related injuries and illnesses and to note the extent and severity of each case. Now, employers, and that means the United States Postal Service as well, may use the OSHA 300, the OSHA 300A, or the OSHA 301 forms, or equivalent forms, for recording injuries and illnesses. Now, for those of you that want to follow me here, if you want, on OSHA's website, again, which is www.osha.gov, if you go to under standards there at the top, select laws and regulations, then under standards, select record keeping. There you will see regulations and standards under 29 CFR, CFR meaning Code of Federal Regulation, subsection 1904. Scroll down till you see subsection 1904.29, which is forms, and select that. Here you will see everything under the subsection 1904.29 that I'm going to talk about here, starting with subsection 1904.29A, which I stated earlier. It states you meaning the employer, must use the OSHA 300, 300A, and 301 forms or equivalent forms for recordable injuries and illnesses. The OSHA 300 form is called the Log of Work-Related Injuries and Illnesses. The 300A is the Summary of Work-Related Injuries and Illnesses. And the OSHA 301 form is called the Injury and Illness Incident Report. Guys, this is a basic requirement, and it states so here under the Code of Federal Regulations. Management and our agencies have to follow this. Now, I hear you, some of y'all out there right now saying, well, that's great, Ron, but how the hell does this affect me? Well, let's continue on here with 29 CFR, subsection 1904.29, and it'll all make sense when I'm done here, I promise. Just stay with me here, and we'll tie this all together. So again, looking at 29 CFR, in subsection 1904.29B2, it states that the employer must complete an OSHA 301 incident report form or an equivalent form for each recordable injury or illness entered into the OSHA 300 log. Then in 29 CFR subsection 1904.29B3, it states that the employer must enter each recordable injury or illness on the OSHA 300 log and 301 incident report within 7 calendar days of receiving information that a recordable injury or illness has occurred. So again, when you report your injury, they got 7 calendar days to put that into their to the OSHA 300 log and the 301 incident report. 7 calendar days. Now, some of y'all out there are probably asking, well, what constitutes an equivalent form? And that's a great question. And in fact, 29 CFR subsection 1904.29B4 answers that question for us, as it states that an equivalent form is one that has the same information, but is as readable and understandable and is completed using the same instructions as the OSHA form it replaces. Many employers use an insurance form instead of an OSHA 301 incident report or supplement an insurance form by adding any additional information required by OSHA. So for those of you who are really paying attention here and actually ask that very question to yourself, there you go. Now you know what an equivalent form is defined as per CFR states. Also, just know that the employer, they can keep records on a computer if the computer can produce equivalent forms when they are needed, as described in 29 CFR subsection 1904.35 and also subsection 1904.40. They may keep their records using the computer system. Now, with regards to privacy, there are situations where an employer does not have to put the employee's name on forms for privacy reasons. As 29 CFR subsection 1904.29B6 states that if there is a quote-unquote privacy concern case, they may not enter the employee's name on the OSHA 300 log. Instead, they just enter quote-unquote privacy case in the space normally used for the employee's name. This will protect the privacy of the injured or ill employee when another employee, a former employee, or an authorized representative is provided access to the OSHA 300 log as they required by subsection 1904.35B2, which I'll talk about soon here, as this is very important for us. But in addition to this, this subsection also states that the employer also must keep a separate confidential list of the case numbers and employee names for their privacy concern cases so that they can update the cases and provide the information to the government if asked to do so. Now, again, for those asking what does a privacy concern case constitute or how does one determine if an injury or illness is a privacy concern, lucky for us, 29 CFR subsection 1904.29B7 states the employer must consider the following injuries or illnesses to be privacy concern cases. And that could be an injury or illness to an intimate body part or the reproductive system, an injury or illness resulting from a sexual assault, mental illnesses, HIV infection, hepatitis or tuberculosis, needle stick injuries and cuts from sharp objects that are contaminated with another person's blood or other potentially infectious material. And you can see subsection 1904.8 for definitions for more on that. And other illnesses if the employee voluntarily requests that his or her name not be entered on the log. That's right. You can request that your name not be placed in the log if you want to. It's your right. It's your choice. But just know that's a right that should you want to use it for whatever reason. All right. And to go a bit more off of privacy concern cases, 29 CFR subsection 1904.29B9 states that if an employer has removed the employee's name and they still have a reasonable basis to believe that information describing the privacy concern case may be personally identifiable, even though the employee's name has been omitted, they may use discretion in describing the injury or illness on both the OSHA 300 and 301 forms. They must enter enough information to identify the cause of the incident and the general severity of the injury or illness, but they do not need to include details of an intimate or private nature. For example, a sexual assault case could be described as an injury from assault, or an injury to a reproductive organ may be described as a lower abdominal injury, right? Now, lastly here, 29 CFR, again, that's Code of Federal Regulation, subsection 1904.29B10 states that if an employer decides to voluntarily disclose these forms to persons other than government representatives, employees, former employees, or authorized representatives, and we'll get into that as subsection 1904.35 and 0.40, they describe that more, but they must remove or hide the employees' names and other personally identifying information, except for the following cases only to which they may disclose the forms with personally identifying information. Those cases include to an auditor or consultant hired by the employer to evaluate the safety and health program, to the extent necessary for processing a claim for workers' compensation or other insurance benefits, or to a public health authority or law enforcement agency for uses and disclosures for which consent an authorization or opportunity to agree or object is not required under Department of Health and Human Services standards for privacy of individually identifiable health information per 45 CFR subsection 164.512. Now listen, that was a hell of a lot of information, and I thank you all for sticking with me this far. I hope you are writing this shit down or writing things down when you have a chance. And you know, I know most of you are working right now and more than likely listening to this episode when you're at work, but make sure you write it down nonetheless. But having read all of those, and listen, I know some of those are going to apply more so than others, but I just wanted you to have the full depth of the information there, even though you probably won't even use some of it. But if you're smart, you'll take a little bit from each one and know how to use it and word it so that you can get what you need. I want you to know one more CFR, and that is CFR 1904.35B2. And again, for those of you that want to follow me here, if you want, on OSHA's website, again, www.osha.gov, under standards, select laws and regulations. Then under standards, select record keeping. There you'll see regulations and standards are in 29 CFR, subsection 1904. Scroll down till you see subsection 1904.35 this time, right? Which is employee involvement, and select that. Then scroll till you see subsection 1904.35B2, where it states an employer's employees, former employees, their personal representatives, and their authorized employee representatives have the right to access the OSHA injury and illness records with some limitations that describe below. And I'll get into those in a moment. But guys, this one is huge, big time. Remember it, write it down, take a picture. I don't give a fuck how you do it, just do it, right? Now, I know I'm showing my age there a bit with that movie quote from Friday with Chris Tucker, who plays Smokey, right? But, you know, for real, man, joke set aside, write it down, right? Because that is huge for us. Before I let you know why, let me go over those limitations discussed in 29 CFR subsection 1904.35B2, which basically just states what an authorized employee representative is, and that's an authorized collective bargaining agent of employees. Your union representation, if you will, right? There's an example of one. That's what that means. And then it goes on to tell us who a personal representative of an employee or former employee can be, which is any person that the employee or former employee designates as such in writing, or the legal representative of a deceased or legally incapacitated employee or former employee. But another big one to write down and remember here is 29 CFR subsection 1904.35B2, and then there's three I's in parentheses. And that states when an employee, former employee, personal representative, or authorized employee representative asks for copies of your current or stored OSHA 300 logs for an establishment the employee or former employee has worked in, you, meaning the employer, must give the requester a copy of the relevant OSHA 300 log or logs by the end of the next business day. And remember, the employer, they must leave the names on the 300 log when requested, unless to protect the privacy of injured and ill employees for certain quote-unquote privacy concern cases, right, as I mentioned earlier. Also, under 29 CFR subsection 1904.35B2, V, or Roman numeral 5, right? But V in parentheses followed by capital A. It states, when an employee, former employee, or personal representative asks for a copy of the OSHA 301 incident report describing an injury or illness to that employee or former employee, you, the employer, must give the requester a copy of the OSHA 301 incident report containing that information by the end of the next business day. Now, with regards to the OSHA 301 form, 29 CFR subsection 1904.35B2V capital B states when an authorized employee representative asks the employer for copies of the OSHA 301 incident reports for an establishment where the agent represents employees under a collective bargaining agreement, the employer must give copies of those forms to the authorized employee representative within 7 calendar days. They are only required to give the authorized employee representative information from the OSHA 301 incident report entitled, "Tell Us About the Case," and they must remove all other information from the copy of the OSHA 301 incident report or the equivalent substitute form that they may use that they give the authorized employee representative. Now, again, remember, an authorized employee representative could be an authorized collective bargaining agent of the employees. Again, your union representation, for example, right? So again, the OSHA 300 log and the OSHA 301 incident report, when you, the employee, request that, management has to the end of the next business day to give that to you. Now listen, I know what I just went over was a mouthful, and some of you right now may be like, Ron, what the fuck was all that? And that's okay, I get it. It can be a little overwhelming with all these codes of federal regulation and subsections, especially when some sound similar, yet they are different. But stay with me here, as not only will I tie this all together for you and explain more on how we can use all this to protect our rights and hold management and or the agency accountable, but also discipline them when they violate our rights and commit willful and illegal actions against us regarding our on-the-job work injuries or illnesses and our safety or hazard issues we experienced and or reported. So keep writing things down. Come back and reference this episode, or better yet, go to OSHA's website or Google what I'm explaining and going over with you here and read more about the information I'm sharing right now with you. I urge you to, whether you are union affiliated or not. Remember, knowledge is power. Now, having said that, I want to move right into the OSHA fact sheet, which details filing a whistleblower complaint under Section 11C of the OSHA Act of 1970. And I will also post this on my Fed Up Facebook page in case any of you want to have this saved on your phone to reference it if needed. This OSHA fact sheet, which is just one of the fact sheets in a series of informational fact sheets highlighting OSHA's programs, policies, or standards, reminds us that employees are protected from retaliation for raising workplace health and safety concerns and for reporting work-related injuries or illnesses. Again, this is huge for us, especially those of us within the United States Postal Service, as we know how often management and or the agency violates OSHA law and regulations on the regular with no repercussions whatsoever. So let's start holding them accountable by educating ourselves on these OSHA laws and regulations. Section 11C of the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970 prohibits employers from retaliating against covered employees for exercising a variety of rights guaranteed under the OSHA Act, such as filing a safety or health complaint with OSHA, raising a health and safety concern with their employers, participating in an OSHA inspection, or reporting a work-related injury or illness. Now, covered employees is defined as any employee of a person engaged in a business affecting interstate commerce, except employees of the United States, states, or political subdivision of states. However, employees of the United States Postal Service are covered employees. Section 11C and this fact sheet also talks about protected activity and how employers cannot discharge or terminate or in any manner retaliate against an employee because the employee filed a complaint or instituted or caused to be instituted any proceeding under or related to the OSHA Act of 1970 or exercised any right afforded to them by the OSHA Act. Now, some examples include, but are not limited to, communicating orally or in writing with management personnel about occupational safety or health matters, including asking questions or expressing concerns, requesting safety data sheets, reporting a work-related injury or illness, or requesting copies of OSHA standards or regulations, or filing a safety and health complaint with OSHA, or participating in an OSHA on-site inspection. Also, it talks about unfavorable employment actions and how a person, management in most cases, right, by taking an unfavorable employment action against an employee, it may be found to have violated Section 11C of the OSHA Act. The main thing here to realize is that unfavorable employment actions may include firing or laying off, blacklisting, demoting, denying overtime or promotion, disciplining, denying benefits, failure to hire or rehire, intimidation, making threats, reassignment affecting prospects for promotion, and even reducing pay or hours. All these are violations of Section 11C of the OSHA Act. So keep that in mind, guys. And this is, again, this is huge for us, right? Especially as postal employees, as how many of you all have experienced one or more of these unfavorable actions? A majority of us have already or will in the future. For the sake of making a point here, as I do not know the exact percentages, but I do know that it's a percentage that is way too high here. But I'd say approximately 80% of us will experience these unfavorable actions in our careers here, and 20% of us will not. Again, not the exact percentages, as I do not know what they are, but to paint the picture here and to prove a point, as whatever these percentages and numbers are, we all know that they are way too high because we either been through it ourselves or know someone who is. But these percentages should at least be the opposite of each other, right? With 20% experiencing unfavorable actions from an employer and 80% who do not. Now, that's still a high percentage who would experience unfavorable employment actions from management and the agency, but that in itself would be a great leap towards progress here. But realize again, this is huge for us as we are both covered employees and protected as postal employees. Now, for those of you who are not postal employees, remember, check to see if you are an exception mentioned earlier on in this episode, because chances are that if you are not one of those exceptions, this applies to you as well. Again, know your rights, educate yourselves, protect yourself from management's mistreatment and willful misconduct. Do your due diligence and be the best advocate for yourself. Just a few more things here with the OSHA fact sheet regarding Section 11C under the OSHA Act of 1970. Now, just like EEOs, where we got to file a complaint within 45 days of the alleged discriminatory event or effective date of the personal action, or for my NALC union brothers and sisters out there, within 14 days of the violation occurring regarding a grievance from the time that we first learned there was a violation had, right? Filing a complaint with OSHA also has its timeline, as the deadline for filing any complaints must be filed within 30 days after the alleged unfavorable employment action occurred. That is when the employee was notified of the retaliatory action, right? Now, employees filing untimely retaliation complaints with OSHA, which again would be the 31st day and on, they may be referred to the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, if you will, for possible further action. As to the extent of that action, I'm not going to get into that much here, but the reason why they refer to you to the NLRB is because, one, it's past the 30-day timeline to file with OSHA, and two, because on the 31st day, it may possibly then fall under unfair labor practices at that point. See, there's an exchange of information between the NLRB and OSHA, and more of that can be seen in an MOU from October 31st of last year, 2023, between the NLRB and the Department of Labor and OSHA, more specifically Section 3A. But it states that the NLRB and OSHA may share, either upon request or upon respective agency's own initiative, any information or data that supports each agency's enforcement mandates, whether obtained during an investigation or through any other sources to the extent permitted by law. This may include complaint referrals and other sharing of information in complaint or investigative files relating to alleged violations of the NLRA and laws enforced by OSHA. Now, information will only be shared after a careful review and determination from the supplying agency that the information is both relevant and necessary to the recipient agency's enforcement responsibilities, and that the information will be used in a manner that is compatible with the purpose for which the agency collected the records. When information is shared, each agency must comply with the terms and conditions in Section 3, E through F of this MOU that I'm talking about here between the NLRB and OSHA and the Department of Labor, as well as any additional terms and conditions the supplying agency may specify as to particular information shared. The agencies agree that each agency may decide not to share information in response to a particular request made for information or to limit the scope or use of information shared in response to a particular request. Also, in this MOU between the NLRB and OSHA, and listen up here, it states that OSHA will, when encountering potential victims of unfair labor practices who have not filed a complaint with the NLRB, promptly provide them or their collective bargaining representative with the NLRB's phone number and website. And if an employee who is the potential victim of an unfair labor practice files an 11C complaint with OSHA, and that complaint is untimely, OSHA will even advise the complainant that they may file a charge with the NLRB and that the NLRB time limit to file is 6 months, which is longer than OSHA's 30 days. And therefore, OSHA recommends that the complainant contact the NLRB as soon as possible to discuss their rights. OSHA personnel will provide the complainant with NLRB's phone number and their website, which they even give it right there on the OSHA's website here. But NLRB's phone number is 1-844-762-6572. And of course, their website is www.nlrb.gov. Now, what's neat is on the opposite side of that coin here, the NLRB will promptly share with OSHA information related to workers currently or likely exposed to health or safety hazards or suspected violations of the laws that OSHA enforces and or encourage affected individuals, representatives, or labor organizations to promptly contact OSHA, for instance, by calling, again, OSHA at 1-800-321-OSHA or filing an online safety and health whistleblower complaint through OSHA's website. Again, guys, www.osha.gov. And I said all that because I think it's pretty cool how they work together yet differentiate in the laws and regulations which each entity here enforces and has oversight on. If they can work together, then why shouldn't we be working together as well? And when I say we, for the purpose of this episode relating to the United States Postal Service employees, I mean all postal employees, whatever craft or union you're in. Though this definitely can help all federal employees who fall under and are covered under federal OSHA law. Now, I got off track there a bit, and I can speak more on the MOU I just talked about, but I only wanted to share what I thought was relevant to the OSHA 11C fact sheet that I was just talking about. But let's get back to that fact sheet. It then tells us how to file an 11C complaint, to which it says that an employee or representative of an employee who believes he or she has been retaliated against in violation of Section 11C may file a complaint with OSHA within 30 days of the unfavorable employment action. Complaints may be filed verbally with OSHA by visiting or calling the local OSHA office at 1-800-321-OSHA, or may be filed in writing by sending a written complaint to the closest OSHA regional or area office, or by filing a complaint online at www.whistleblowers.gov/complaint_page.html. Some other things to know are that written complaints may be filed by fax, electronic communication, hand delivery during normal business hours, U.S. mail. Confirmation services are recommended, though. Certified mail, get a signature and all that good stuff, right? Or other third-party commercial carrier. Now, the date of the postmark, the fax, electronic communication, the phone call, the hand delivery, delivery to a third-party commercial carrier, the in-person filing at an OSHA office, it's all considered to be the date filed when you made that call, when you send in that complaint, when the postmark on that mailing, whatever the case is, that is the date filed. Now, no particular form is required and complaints may be submitted in any language. To file a complaint electronically, please visit again www.whistleblowers.gov/complaint.page.html. Now, to contact OSHA to file a complaint, please call again 1-800-321-OSHA and they will connect you to the closest office or visit www.osha.gov as well to file your complaint. Guys, all this is pretty much repetitive as far as the phone numbers and the websites, but I need to keep saying this so it sinks into you guys so you know who to call, where to go to utilize your rights here. Now, regardless how you decide to file a complaint here, upon receipt, OSHA will review the complaint and determine whether it is appropriate to conduct a fact-finding investigation. As long as the complaint was filed in a timely manner, again, within 30 days from the unfavorable employment action, and the allegation is covered by Section 11C, then OSHA should investigate that complaint according to requirements in 29 CFR Part 1977. Which I'll leave you to look at that CFR on your own time if you want to read it. But just know that as long as you meet the requirements to file a complaint to OSHA, they should and will investigate it. Listen, it comes down to this. If you believe working conditions are unsafe or unhealthy, it's recommended that you bring those conditions up to your employer's and/or management's attention as soon as possible before you're faced with either refusing to perform a task or direct order or exposing yourself to a serious hazard. Doing that should always be done first and foremost. Common sense, right? But it's also an extra layer of documentation, if you will, that you did bring it to their attention, to your immediate supervisor or management personnel, and even the agency itself, and that they did nothing to correct the dangerous situation or the issue at hand. And then, if you need to, you'll have all this add it to your documentation when you file a complaint with OSHA concerning whatever that said unsafe or hazardous working condition is or was. But again, just as I always preach to others, documentation is everything. So be very detailed in your documentation and your complaint as you possibly can. Paint the picture for the investigator, right? The more you do that, the better chance you have at decreasing the chance of slowing down the investigation by having the investigator ask more questions to fact find what should have already been included in your complaint and or documentation to begin with. Again, common sense, right? Also, and I know I said about refusing a direct order or refusing to carry out a task requested by management, but you also got to understand that not all work refusals due to unsafe or unhealthy conditions are protected by Section 11C. So make sure you educate yourselves on that part. Now, a worker, meaning you, the employee, right, would be protected from subsequent retaliation when they have reasonable apprehension of death or serious injury and refuses in good faith to perform the task and has no alternative assignment and there is insufficient time to have federal or state OSHA conduct an inspection or where such an inspection has already taken place, and where possible, the employee has sought from the employer but was unable to obtain correction of the dangerous conditions which were brought to their attention. Guys, remember, safety is your call, the employee's call. Management can ask you all they want, but if it's unsafe or you have an understanding, a fear or an anxiety that something bad can happen from fulfilling that request from management that may put you into an unsafe or unhealthy workplace or into a hazardous situation, then question it first, bring it to management's attention, give them an opportunity to correct the unsafe or hazardous situation that is present. And if it isn't, again, safety's your call. In the words of Nancy Reagan, just say no, right? But also state again why you are refusing. And remember, OSHA is here for you to file a complaint for that safety or hazard issue, especially if they retaliate against you for reporting that safety issue to them to begin with. Now, they'll say that they are disciplining you for not following a direct order, but in reality, it's because you brought that safety issue to their attention. They chose to do nothing about it and held you responsible for that task not being completed when it was management who failed to get that task completed and by also not addressing the safety concern or concerns that you brought to their attention. So file the complaint and let OSHA do its thing. Now, finishing up with the OSHA fact sheet here, I also want to add that during an investigation, If the evidence supports an employee's claim of retaliation and a voluntary settlement cannot be reached, the Secretary of Labor, through the Office of the Solicitor of Labor, the SOL, may litigate the case in U.S. District Court, which means the Secretary may seek relief to make the employee whole, including reinstatement, payment of back pay with interest, compensation for expenses the employee may have incurred as a result of the retaliation with interest, mind you, and for emotional distress, punitive damages, and non-monetary relief. That's right. You may be made whole with one or more of these remedies I just mentioned. Now, we saw this with a few carriers I spoke about with Richie Ray up in New York, right? Which was in episode 10 and 11, where those carriers who were terminated for reporting their work injuries or accidents and OSHA fined the post office, those carriers got their jobs back, and it was one or more of them who got their back pay as well. I believe Richie Ray even said in working with the lead investigator for OSHA that they even said that they cannot believe that the employer, the post office, right, thinks they are above the law. So this was a big win for us postal employees. The post office and the mistreatment, the illegal actions of them that they take from the retaliation and wrongful termination that the USPS does on a regular is now on OSHA's radar. So again, OSHA is there for us, guys. That lead investigator also said, though, that this was the first complaint that they have received in their region regarding the post office in their 30 years or so working for OSHA. So that tells me that a lot of us do not use OSHA as a tool to hold management accountable for their actions. We are simply just accepting things for the way they are, and that shit's got to stop. Again, it has to be a collective effort here if we're going to see a change across the board happen. Another quick story here. If you remember my guest from episodes 15 and 16, the rural carrier from Pennsylvania, well, they are still going through it today. Not only do they have a whistleblower case that they reported and filed against the United States Postal Service regarding the retaliation and disciplining from them reporting their on-the-job work injury, which was caused by management, by the way, as it was management who swung open the rear door of the LOV when the carrier was still in the truck at that time and the door smacked the carrier in the head because they were still in the back trying to get a package for the customer. Now, there's a long story there, and we'll have that guest on again in the near future, and we'll let them explain that whole situation and then some. But they were disciplined for that. They got suspended for that injury, and management said that they were working unsafely. Well, what about management flying open that rear door without a care in the world if that would hurt the carrier or not? Isn't that creating an unsafe situation or workplace for that carrier? Hell yeah, it is. Management did that out of anger, which caused the injury. Again, where's the accountability for management's actions? But to add insult to injury, if you heard this carrier's interview, they talked about a lot of issues with management, but also with the LOV. Well, with what I just said here, in addition to this carrier filing a whistleblower case stemming from that on-the-job work injury, they recently just notified OSHA for a safety issue as well, as they were in a dangerous situation. Now, we all know that the LOVs we drive across this country have so many problems, with catch and fire perhaps being one of the bigger ones right now, right? Among many other issues that we know. Well, this carrier felt sick one day while driving her LOV. She felt dizzy and nauseous. They thought that they smelled exhaust. So they bought a carbon monoxide detector, a really good one at that, and brought it with them the next day to work. They took videos while they were performing this test, by the way, and the detector was beeping loud. The carrier was starting to feel like they did the other day, which was dizzy, nauseous. The detector measured the carbon monoxide within that truck at 270. Now, to put it in perspective, any reading above 50 can be dangerous. Anything above 400 can be fatal. So the carrier naturally refused to drive that LOV anymore. They filled out a 1767, which is a form to report a hazard or unsafe condition or practice at work. And they also filed a 4565, which is a vehicle maintenance slip. And management did nothing, nothing to try and take care of that safety issue. So being that they did nothing, they were refusing to take the LOV, and that's all they had for her. So the carrier stayed home because they refused to drive that truck and management was refusing to swap it out. So the carrier emailed or wrote a letter, one of the two, to DeJoy regarding this incident or his office, right? Because I'm sure that man has people going through emails and letters for him. But 2 days later, management ironically got that carrier a new truck and the United States Postal Service safety person came to the place with their equipment and tested the truck for carbon monoxide and said there was nothing wrong with the truck and said it tested zeros. Zeros. Now, how can that be? How can that be that much of a difference? The least would be in zero and what they measured the carrier, which was 270. Now, I can understand 200 and 270, right? Being a difference of 70. But the least amount to the carrier's amount? Come on, man. That's kind of shady right there. That's fishy. Come on now. But, you know, nonetheless, that's what happened. They came out. They took the test. And they said it was zeros. And then this USPS safety guy proceeded to say that they were only there because this carrier reached out to DeJoy. So they had to come here. Man, I wish that was me in that situation. I put that dude on blast. Acting like they didn't want to be there. But since they swapped out the truck, OSHA considers the case closed, which they would, right? Because the United States Postal Service corrected and removed that safety issue, which was that LOV, that dangerous situation, if you will, right? But OSHA did say that if it happens again, to reach back out and they will come out and investigate. Now, I could say so much more regarding this incident, but I'll let this carrier explain more in their own words when they come back on the show again. But those first cases I just mentioned previously from New York, they set precedent and are but a few cases that are bringing awareness regarding management's willful misconduct and total disregard for not just us as employees, but also towards laws and regulations set forth to protect us employees from that very kind of neglectful behavior. So let's keep it going here. If you are experiencing retaliation or even termination from your job for reporting a safety or hazard issue or reporting your on-the-job work injury, file a complaint with OSHA, just like this carrier did from PA. Now remember, it's got to be within 30 days from the unfavorable employment action taking place. But that's how you fight back and protect not just your job, but everyone's job, as that will eventually protect future employees from having to go through what you just did and hopefully deter those actions from management, therefore decreasing these situations from even happening at all. Accountability and discipline, y'all. There's two of those three foundational pillars I always talk about, right? But in closing out this OSHA Section 11C fact sheet, I also want you to know that if the OSHA regional administrator whose office investigated the case finds that the evidence does not support an employee's claim of retaliation, the employee may seek review by the Directorate of Whistleblower Protection Programs, that's the DWPP, in Washington, D.C., by filing a request for such review within 15 days of the employee's receipt of the dismissal letter with a copy to the regional administrator. Now, more red tape, y'all, I know, just like everything else, but I'm just letting you know that just like when we get a denial from the Department of Labor, WCP, for our work injury, we can appeal, right? Well, if you get a dismissal letter from OSHA, it's not the end either, as we can seek a review. Now, is it more red tape? Sure. But if you have a serious complaint, chances are it won't get dismissed. But if it does, then just know that you can do a review with DWPP in Washington, D.C. Now, that's all I got for the OSHA fact sheet here on Section 11C. Again, I will post a PDF of this fact sheet for you all to have on my Fed Up Facebook group page to have and see and to read and have a copy. And you can actually go to www.whistleblowers.gov and you'll have a whole plethora of information there, including the Section 11C part of the OSHA Act of 1970 that I was just talking about with that fact sheet. Again, I urge you all to go there. Again, I'll post it on Fed Up, but I urge y'all to go to the page as well and just review things. Look things up yourself, man. Now, you can also call OSHA again. Here's that number again at 1-800-321-OSHA if you have any questions or need more information. They will be more than happy to provide you with it. And just as I mentioned before, I will put the OSHA fact sheet here on Fed Up Facebook group page for you all to review. But again, I urge you all to please read more on this and advocate for yourself when you need to. Because we all know that management will not stop breaking the contract or even the law. So let's take the fight to them and start holding them accountable for their willful misconduct, right? Listen, there's a lot that I can say about collusion here, right? You know, you hear me talk about all the time. You got union representatives in bed with management, right? And that's true across this fucking country. I don't care who you are. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Because I already know what it is. And I know a lot of you do as well out there. But what I'm getting at is we always rely on the grievances, the grievance process. We rely on the OIG to do us right. We rely on EEOs. And I'm not saying they don't work. But guys, you got union representatives and leaders in bed with management, right? Locally or nationally, it doesn't fucking matter. EEOs, do you think they work out in our favor for the most part? Hell no. Why? Because a lot of those people are contracted by the United States Postal Service. I mean, you got the EEOs, you got the unions. Everything that we try to have at our dispense is contracted through the post office, or people like our unions are in bed with management. So how is that helping us? It's just going through the steps. It's just for show at that moment, right? That is why we should use outside resources such as OSHA, such as the NLRB. Let's involve them. Let's bring them in to help us with our issues, right? That's why it's important that we learn and educate ourselves on OSHA and NLRB, whatever they have for us, the laws, the policies, procedures, the regulations, and try to tie that in with whatever it is that we need to tie it in with, right? The ELM, the JCAM, the M39, the M41, whatever the case is, right? Tie it in with all that, guys. Now, listen, if you stuck with me this far, thank you. I appreciate it. I know that was a lot of information to take in and digest. And if you do not understand it all, it's okay. I'm still learning every single day as well, as that should be the goal for all of us, right? To become more knowledgeable and learn something new every single day. And listen, even though I'm spitting this information out to y'all, I still want you to research and educate yourselves as well. Verify and confirm what I am saying is accurate. And if I misspeak, or if I misspoke, I should say, or shared the wrong thing, let me know about it. Send me a message or email and let me know so I can address it and fix it, right? Now, I can tell you that I do put in a lot of research and reading and making calls to make sure what I am saying is accurate as it can be before I put it out there. But just as I say about management or even our union representatives, nobody's perfect. No one is, right? That is why it is incredibly important for you all to not only verify what I'm saying to be accurate, and others as well for that matter, but also to learn and educate yourselves so you too can speak with absolute confidence like I do, especially when it comes to our rights and advocating for ourselves. Now, I know that by saying that right there, I may lose credibility or even lose listeners, but I'm just speaking bluntly here and telling you to do what I have done and continue to do, which is one, not take everything you hear for face value. Two, confirm what you see or hear to be accurate. And three, research and learn as much as you can so you can put yourself in a better position to advocate for yourselves when it's needed. And of course, there's four, which is do everything I just mentioned to hold management or a union rep or whoever accountable for their actions and to seek justice for their wrongdoings. After all, it's your ass on the line. It's your ability to provide for you and your family that's on the line when management or whoever comes at you, right? So prepare today while others do nothing so you are better prepared when others start preparing. And listen, I know some of y'all right now are saying or thinking to yourselves, well, Ron, you posted an article of so-and-so and it wasn't quite accurate. Or you said so-and-so and it wasn't true. Well, all I got to say to you is that it's okay to not agree with someone and to have a different opinion on things, but be a free thinker. Don't let what I say or others lead you into making a decision or forming an opinion. Let your moral compass and your free thinking do that for you. Gain all the facts or information that you can. Put it together with what you know. Mix in some research or fact checking of your own and then formulate your own educated decision, your own educated opinion on whatever it is that you are questioning. Everything else should be taken with a grain of salt. We all got to think for ourselves. Stop being a puppet and believing whatever narrative is being pushed down our throats. We all have a responsibility to ourselves to do what's best for ourselves. Now, I hope I am doing you guys justice and doing well by you all by having this platform. And I think I'm going to have an episode addressing some things that I feel need to be addressed on many different levels. But remember, I do this. I created Fed Up because of what I have went through, endured, and overcame. But also to try and help those so that they don't have to go through what I did, and also to inform and educate others, but more importantly, to give each and every one of us a voice and a platform to share our individual experiences and mistreatment and injustices that we've all dealt with or are going through currently, not only so we are heard, but also to try and spread awareness as to what really goes on behind the scenes and to gain attention of someone or some entity or organization that may be able to help us create that change that is missing and that we've needed for quite some time now in our agencies and even our union organizations for that matter. Because it's clear to me that there is so much broken and injustice happening that has been ignored for far too long. Again, I went off a little topic there, but felt the need to say what I just did right there. But in closing here, again, I just want to remind everyone that you have rights here through OSHA. Just as much as our employers have a responsibility with regards to safety issues and hazards and workplace injuries, educate yourselves, learn and utilize those rights when necessary, and file a complaint when warranted. Remember, you have a right to be provided PPE free of charge, no cost to you. You have a right to information, including asking to see or have a copy of injury or illness records, as discussed earlier with the OSHA 300 log and forms, right? You have the right to know about laws and your rights, as described earlier regarding the OSHA poster entitled Job Safety and Health. It's the law, right? Which should be displayed where all employees can see it. If it isn't, then report it to OSHA. You have the right to file a complaint with OSHA and request an OSHA on-site inspection. And remember, OSHA doesn't have to tell the employer who filed the complaint or requested the inspection. And you also have rights during an inspection and following issuance of any citations, which I didn't get into here. And you also have the right to request a review if a complaint was dismissed. And most importantly, you have the right to use your rights under the whistleblower protection, which is the big one for us postal employees because of all the retaliation and wrongful termination due to reporting our on-the-job work injuries or any safety or hazard issues. Now, in having shared everything I did here in this episode, and believe me, I could have went deeper into this, but I just wanted to share with you what I thought would be easiest for you all to understand, something to start with, the basics, if you will, to learn, so you all can tie that in with a grievance as well, or why you're refusing a direct order when it revolves around unsafe working practices or conditions, and even when management and or agency retaliates against us for reporting a safety issue or hazard, an on-the-job work injury, or worse, they terminate us for it, but then tries to make it seem like they're terminating us for something totally different, which the United States Postal Service management is notorious for. So I hope you all gained a lot of knowledge and insight here regarding OSHA and its laws and regulations. And spread this on to all your brothers and sisters out there within the Postal Service, no matter what craft they are in, so they too can use it to fight for themselves. And remember, read over Section 8 of the ELM, which is Safety, Health, and Environment, starting with Section 810, which is Occupational Safety and Health Program. Learn what you can from all that and tie that together with OSHA laws and regulations when it can be applied together, and you will see how both OSHA and the ELM could be used together to counteract any unfavorable employment actions and the willful misconduct, neglect, and total disregard management has for you and any laws, regulations, and policies and procedures that they are supposed to be following but often do not follow. Another part of the ELM I recommend all postal employees read over and learn is Section 666 of the ELM, entitled Prohibited Personal Practices, more specifically Section 666.18, entitled Reprisal for Release of Information, and Section 666.3, which is entitled Whistleblower Protection, which lays out the processes for a protected employee to enforce their rights to the USPS OIG. And the process can be initiated through OIG's complaint form, though I gotta say, I filed a complaint with the OIG before, though it wasn't pertaining to a retaliation or whistleblower case. It was pertaining to a coworker of mine. And I'll talk about that incident when I do the episode Getting Ozzied. But I wasn't impressed with the OIG when I filed the complaint. They pretty much didn't investigate my issues. They laughed it off, swept it under the rug. But for this purpose, once you read those two sections, you will see how that also revolves around everything here we just talked about today. And if your job or safety or even holding management and your agency accountable for their actions isn't good enough for you to motivate you to report any safety issues or dangerous work hazards or your on-the-job work injuries or illnesses or any unfavorable employment actions taken against you, remember, if there is evidence to support your claim of retaliation and a voluntary settlement cannot be reached and it's a clear violation, the Secretary of Labor, the SOL, right, through the Office of Solicitor, may litigate the case in U.S. District Court, where the Secretary may seek relief to make you whole, the employee whole, as I mentioned earlier, which may even include compensation for expenses the employee may have incurred as a result of the retaliation with interest, and for emotional distress, punitive damages, and non-monetary relief. You could get paid. And you could hold management and the agency accountable for their actions. That's a win. Just like a USPS employee who back in 2015 was awarded $229,000 in damages from the retaliation they dealt with from trying to help another coworker with their workplace health concerns. Just be prepared, though, that being a whistleblower may or may not make a target on your back for doing the right thing, as that is why most people will not go that route. They'll shy away from that. And probably why people are so uneducated with regards to OSHA and their protective rights under OSHA. Don't let them intimidate you or coerce you into not educating yourself. Hell, even I was targeted against for standing up for myself and others. And I still am, in a sense, which maybe I'll get into that in another episode. But just know that even with a target on your back, you can still come out on top, just like I did. And I will continue to do. Why? Because I educate myself. Just don't let management scare you or bully or coerce you into not doing the right thing. Because when we do that, they win. And that's what we don't want. And remember, filing an OSHA complaint can be tied into filing a grievance as well. And even filing an EEO for discrimination from management against you for your disability. This is why I wanted to do this episode. Learn and educate yourselves and others so you all can use every resource out there for you to use in your favor to fight back against the toxic and unethical law-breaking management personnel we deal with on the regular. Again, not every management personnel is like that. But it is the majority within the Postal Service that I can tell you for certain that is like that. Now, I can't speak for other agencies because I don't work for y'all, but I do know a lot of workers outside of the Postal Service who work for another agency and are a member of a different federal union outside of the Postal Service who are experiencing issues when they too get injured on the job. But just remember, law is the law. Management can say or do what the fuck they want, but if we don't hold them accountable for their actions, then it'll continue to happen again and again and again, and will more than likely get worse. Listen, I hope this episode educated and informed you all in regards to OSHA and other resources we can use just enough for you to learn and use so that you can fight back. If you have any questions regarding this episode or need some type of guidance or help regarding any of this to understand it better, again, I know this was a lot to digest. Please reach out to me by email or send me a message on Facebook Messenger, and I'll be more than happy to get with you and explain whatever needs to be explained to you better so that you can understand it fully. Now, with regards to my closing messages or quotes, let me just say to all my federal brothers and sisters out there within the United States Postal Service, it is crucial that we stand united in ensuring our safety, well-being, and our right to speak out against unsafe working conditions without fear of retaliation. Knowledge is our most powerful weapon, and understanding the tools at our disposal is key to safeguarding our rights. I urge each one of you to familiarize yourselves with OSHA law and regulations and the Employee Labor Relations Manual, specifically the sections I mentioned earlier, as these resources are not just documents, they are shields that can protect us against any unjust retaliation or termination for reporting safety concerns or work-related injuries or illnesses. Knowing OSHA law and regulations empowers us to recognize and report unsafe conditions without hesitation. So familiarize yourselves with the OSHA 300 log and understand how it can serve as evidence in cases of workplace injuries and illnesses, and how federal laws and regulations are designed to protect us. Learn about those rights available to you if you face retaliation for speaking up or for reporting a safety issue or work-related injury. And remember, we are stronger together. For united, we can create a workplace culture that values safety, transparency, and fair treatment simply by sharing your knowledge with coworkers and empowering others to stand up for their rights. So report safety issues promptly. Our collective safety is non-negotiable. Do not hesitate to use the tools available to you. Again, OSHA laws and regulations are there for your protection, so use them and support one another. If you witness unfair treatment, be a voice for your coworkers. Remember, witness statements are everything. And remember, in unity, we find strength. So let us foster an environment where our commitment to safety and well-being prevails over any fear of retaliation. By staying informed and standing united, we ensure that each federal employee can work in an environment that prioritizes safety, fairness, hell, even mutual respect. So continue to learn and educate yourselves and start using that knowledge, whatever it is that you learn, in this case, OSHA and the ELM, and start using it to hold management accountable for their willful actions that continually hurt our brothers and sisters out there across this country. And to management out there, listen, you know what you're doing. You know what you do is wrong and even illegal and unethical at times. So I'm just going to say this. It is with a sense of responsibility and dedication to a shared workplace that we address an issue of paramount importance. And that is the mistreatment, retaliation, and wrongful termination of employees who report work injuries, safety concerns, or hazards. As employees of the Postal Service, we recognize the challenges and the pressure that comes with the job. However, we cannot and will not tolerate any form of mistreatment or retaliation for fulfilling our duty to report safety or retaliation issues. Every employee has the right to a safe and respectful workplace free from fear or intimidation. We, the employees, will stand united in our commitment to ensuring justice, fairness, and accountability within our workplace. Listen, we refuse to be silent victims any longer. We demand accountability and we demand discipline. Mistreatment, retaliation, wrongful termination will not be accepted or overlooked any longer. We will utilize every resource at our disposal to fight against the injustices, willful misconduct, unethical or illegal behavior taken against us. Every unethical or illegal act committed against employees will be met with the full force of collective knowledge and determination to hold you accountable. If collaboration, which is what we are seeking, but if collaboration is not embraced and you cease to stop this type of behavior, then just know that we are committed to educating ourselves further and utilizing our knowledge to hold accountable those responsible for mistreatment and injustice. Namely, you, management, who prove over and over again there is no line that you would not cross to screw over your employees, which makes no fucking sense to me. You're creating a hostile and toxic work environment by doing this. Stop it. Our dedication to workplace justice is and forever will be unwavering, moving forward. Now we invite you to join us in fostering a more positive and supportive workplace and to do the right thing for your employees. But just know that should you not join us in this effort, and again, this isn't any ultimatum by any means, but just know that you will then force our hand to demand justice and to right the wrongs you have caused for us by utilizing all resources available to us to use. And believe me when I say this, when we stand collectively together and expose the ugly truth behind the scenes and what really goes on and how often, the world will see how deep and far your gross negligence for the law, policies, and procedures and regulations runs. And remember, just as you always use conduct unbecoming against us and say all this shit about employees misrepresenting the Postal Service, the saying goes for you as well. Your actions are a reflection of the Postal Service also. And well, when the story comes out over and over again, what you think is going to happen to you when your bosses find out and see how you are treating your employees? How much do you think that your bosses and their bosses will take if it's costing them money or continually being investigated from OSHA or having to pay out on many grievances won? What do you think will happen when you are the one continually responsible for bringing a negative light onto your installation and your bosses and the United States Postal Service as a whole? Well, I'll tell you what will happen. You will be the one getting terminated. Only difference is it will be for legal and just reasons, unlike the illegal and unjust reasons that you do unto us. Now, I won't hold my breath here, but I hope you all will consider doing the right thing for your sake and for ours. Because if not, it's going to get real ugly for y'all when we all start filing multiple complaints and grievances across this country. So do the right thing, especially when no one is looking. It's called integrity. Just do the right thing, man.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends. Shit.